Interludes. Casa Taravangian, Venli.
Interlude 4. Casa. The ship First Dreams crashed through a wave, prompting Casa to cling tightly to the rigging. Her gloved hands already ached, and she was certain each new wave would toss her overboard. She refused to go down below. This was her destiny. She was not a thing to be carted from place to place, not any longer. Besides, that dark sky, suddenly stormy, even though the sailing had been easy up until an hour ago, was no more disconcerting than her visions. Another wave sent water crashing across the deck. Sailors scrambled and screamed, mostly hirelings out of steam, as no rational crew would make this trip. Captain Vazermeb stalked among them, shouting orders, while Draws, the helmsman, kept them on a steady heading. Into the storm. Straight into the storm. Casa held tight, feeling her age as her arms started to weaken. Icy water washed over her, pushing back the hood of her robe, exposing her face and its twisted nature. Most sailors weren't paying attention, though her cry did bring Vazermeb's attention. The only Thalen on board, the captain didn't much match her image of the people. Thalens, to her, were portly little men in vests, merchants with styled hair, who haggled for every last sphere. Vazermeb, however, was as tall as an Alethi, with hands wide enough to palm boulders and forearms large enough to lift them. Over the crashing of waves, he yelled, "Someone get that soul caster below deck!" "No," she shouted back at him. "I stay."
"I didn't pay a prince's ransom to bring you," he said, stalking up to her, "only to lose you over the side."
"I'm not a thing to—"
"Captain,"
a sailor shouted.
"Captain!"
They both looked as the ship tipped over the peak of a huge wave, then teetered, before just kind of falling over the other side. Storms. Kaza's stomach practically squeezed up into her throat, and she felt her fingers sliding on the ropes. Vazermeb seized her by the side of her robe, holding her tight as they plunged into the water beyond the wave. For a brief, terrifying moment, they seemed entombed in the chill water, as if the entire ship had sunk. The wave passed, and Casa found herself lying in a sodden heap on the deck, held by the captain.
"Storming fool," he said to her. "You're my secret weapon. You drown yourself when you're not in my pay, understand?"
She nodded limply, and then realized with a shock she'd been able to hear him easily. The storm was gone? Vazermeb stood up straight, grinning broadly, his white eyebrows combed back into his long mane of dripping hair. All across the deck, the sailors who had survived were climbing to their feet, sopping wet and staring at the sky. It maintained its overcast gloom, but the winds had fallen completely still. Vazermeb bellowed out a laugh, sweeping back his long, curling hair.
"What did I tell you, men? That new storm came from Maemia. Now it has gone and escaped, leaving the riches of its homeland to be plundered."
Everyone knew you didn't linger around Maemia, though everyone had different explanations why. Some rumors told of a vengeful storm here, one that sought out and destroyed approaching ships, the strange wind they'd encountered, which didn't match the timing of High Storm or Everstorm, seemed to support that. The captain started shouting orders, getting the men back into position. They hadn't been sailing long, only a short distance out of Leofor, along the Shin coast, then westward toward this northern section of Aemia. They'd soon spotted the large main island, but had not visited it. Everyone knew that was barren, lifeless. The treasures were on the hidden islands, supposedly lying in wait to enrich those willing to brave the winds and treacherous straits. She cared less for that. What were riches to her? She had come because of another rumor, one spoken of only among her kind. Perhaps here, at last, she could find a cure for her condition. Even as she righted herself, she felt in her pouch, seeking the comforting touch of her soul caster. Hers, no matter what the rulers of Leofor claimed. Had they spent their youths caressing it, learning its secrets? Had they spent their middle years in service, stepping with each use closer and closer to oblivion? The common sailors gave Kaza space, refusing to look her in the eyes. She pulled her hood up, unaccustomed to the gaze of ordinary people. She'd entered the stage where her disfigurements were starkly obvious. Kaza was, slowly, becoming smoke. Vazermeb took the helm himself, giving Draws a break. The lanky man stepped down from the poop deck, noting her by the side of the ship. He grinned at her, which she found curious. She hadn't ever spoken to him. Now he sauntered over, as if intending to make small talk. "So," he said, "up on deck? Through that? You've got guts." She hesitated, considering this strange creature, then lowered her hood. He didn't flinch, even though her hair, her ears, and now parts of her face were disintegrating. There was a hole in her cheek through which you could see her jaw and teeth. Lines of smoke rimmed the hole. The flesh seemed to be burning away. Air passed through it when she spoke, altering her voice, and she had to tip her head all the way back to drink anything. Even then it dribbled out. The process was slow. She had a few years left until the soul casting killed her. Draws seemed intent on pretending nothing was wrong.
"I can't believe we got through that storm. You think it hunts ships, like the stories say?"
He was Leoforan like herself, with deep brown skin and dark brown eyes. What did he want? She tried to remember the ordinary passions of human life, which she'd begun to forget.
"Is it sex you want? No, you are much younger than I am.
Curious.
Are you frightened and wishing for comfort?"
He started to fidget, playing with the end of a tied-off rope.
The prince sent you, right?"
"Ah." So he knew that she was the prince's cousin.
"You wish to connect yourself to royalty? Well, I came on my own."
"Surely he let you go?"
"Of course he didn't. If not for my safety, then for that of my device."
It was hers. She looked off across the too still ocean.
"They locked me up each day, gave me comforts they assumed would keep me happy. They realized that at any moment I could literally make walls and bonds turn to smoke."
Does it hurt?"
"It is blissful. I slowly connect to the device and through it to Roshar, until the day it will take me fully into its embrace."
She lifted a hand and pulled her black glove off, one finger at a time, revealing a hand that was disintegrating. 5 lines of darkness, one rising from the tip of each finger. She turned it, palm toward him.
"I could show you. Feel my touch, and you can know. One moment, and then you will mingle with the air itself."
He fled. Excellent. The captain steered them toward a small island, poking from the placid ocean right where the captain's map had claimed it would be. It had dozens of names. The Rock of Secrets. The Void's Playground. So melodramatic. She preferred the old name for the place. Akina. Supposedly there had once been a grand city here. But who would put a city on an island you couldn't approach? For, jutting from the ocean here, were a set of strange rock formations. They ringed the entire island like a wall, each some 40 feet tall, resembling spearheads. As the ship drew closer, the sea grew choppy again, and she felt a bout of nausea. She liked that. It was a human feeling. Her hand again sought her soul caster. That nausea mixed with a faint sense of hunger. Food was something she often forgot about these days, as her body needed less of it now. Chewing was annoying, with the hole in her cheek. Still, she liked the scents from whatever the cook was stirring up below. Perhaps the meal would calm the men, who seemed agitated about approaching the island. Kaza moved to the poop deck, near the captain.
"Now you earn your keep, soul caster," he said, "and I'm justified in hauling you all the way out here."
"I'm not a thing," she said absently, "to be used. I am a person. Those spikes of stone, they were soul cast there." The enormous stone spearheads were too even in a ring about the island. Judging by the currents ahead, some lurked beneath the waters as well, to rip up the hulls of approaching vessels.
"Can you destroy one?"
the captain asked her. "No, they are much larger than you indicated. But I can make a hole in them, Captain. It is easier to soul cast an entire object. But I am no ordinary soul caster. I have begun to see the dark sky and the second sun, the creatures that lurk, hidden, around the cities of men." He shivered visibly. Why should that have frightened him? She'd merely stated facts.
"We need you to transform the tips of a few under the waves," he said. "Then make a hole at least large enough for the dinghies to get into the island beyond."
"I will keep my word, but you must remember, I do not serve you. I am here for my own purposes." They dropped anchor as close to the spikes as they dared get. The spikes were even more daunting, and more obviously soul-cast, from here. Each would have required several soul-casters in concert, she thought, standing at the prow of the ship, as the men ate a hasty meal of stew. The cook was a woman, Reshi from the looks of her, with tattoos all across her face. She pushed the captain to eat, claiming that if he went in hungry, he'd be distracted. Even Kaza took some, though her tongue no longer tasted food. It all felt like the same mush to her, and she ate with a napkin pressed to her cheek. The captain drew anticipation spren as he waited, ribbons that waved in the wind. And Kaza could see the beasts beyond, the creatures that accompanied the spren. The ship's four dinghies were cramped, with rowers and officers all together, but they made space for her at the front of one. She pulled up her hood, which still hadn't dried, and sat on her bench. What had the captain been planning to do if the storm hadn't stopped? Would he seriously have tried to use her and a dinghy to remove these spears in the middle of a tempest? They reached the first spike, and Kaza carefully unwrapped her soul caster, releasing a flood of light. Three large gemstones connected by chains, with loops for her fingers. She put it on with the gemstones on the back of her hand. She sighed softly to feel the metal against her skin again. Warm, welcoming, a part of her. She reached over the side into the chill water and pressed her hand against the tip of the stone spear, smoothed from years in the ocean. Light from the gemstones lit the water, reflections dancing across her robe. She closed her eyes and felt the familiar sensation of being drawn into the other world, of another will reinforcing her own, something commanding and powerful, attracted by her request for aid. The stone did not wish to change. It was content with its long slumber in the ocean, but yes, yes, it remembered. It had once been air, until someone had locked it into this shape. She could not make it air again. Her soul caster had only one mode, not the full three. She did not know why.
"Smoke," she whispered to the stone. "Freedom in the air. Remember?"
She tempted it, picking at its memories of dancing free.
"Yes.
Freedom." She nearly gave in herself. How wonderful would it be to no longer fear, to soar into infinity on the air, to be free of mortal pains. The tip of the stone burst into smoke, sending an explosion of bubbles up around the dinghy. Kaza was shocked back into the real world, and a peace deep within her trembled, terrified,
She'd almost gone that time. Smoke bubbles rattled the dinghy, which nearly upended. She should have warned them. Sailors muttered, but in the next dinghy over, the captain praised her. She removed two more spear tips beneath the waves before finally reaching the wall. Here, the spearhead-like formations had been grown so close together, there was barely a hand-span gap between them. It took three tries to get the dinghy close enough. As soon as they got into position, some turning of the waves would pull them away again. Finally, the sailors managed to keep the dinghy steady. Kaza reached out with the soul caster. Two of the three gems were almost out of stormlight and glowed only faintly. She should have enough. She pressed her hand against the spike, then convinced it to become smoke. It was easy this time. She felt the explosion of wind from the transformation, her soul crying in delight at the smoke, thick and sweet. She breathed it in through the hole in her cheek while sailors coughed. She looked up at the smoke, drifting away. How wonderful it would be to join it. No. The island proper loomed beyond that hole. Dark, like its stones had been stained by smoke themselves, it had tall rock formations along its center. They looked almost like the walls of a city. The captain's dinghy pulled up to hers, and the captain transferred to her boat. His began to row backward.
What? She asked. Why is your boat heading back?
They claim to not be feeling well, the captain said.
Was he abnormally pale?
Cowards. They won't have any of the prize, then. Gemstones lay around just for the plucking here, Draws added. Generations of great shells have died here, leaving their hearts. We're going to be rich, rich men.
As long as the secret was here. She settled into her place at the prow of the boat as the sailors guided the three dinghies through the gap. The Aemeans had known about soul casters. This was where you'd come to get the devices. In the old days, you'd come to the ancient island of Akina. If there was a secret of how to avoid death by the device she loved, she would find it here. Her stomach began acting up again as they rowed. Kaza endured it, though she felt as if she were slipping into the other world. That wasn't an ocean beneath her, but deep black glass, and two suns in the sky, one that drew her soul toward it, her shadow to stretch out in the wrong direction. Splash! She started. One of the sailors had slipped from his boat into the water. She gaped as another slumped to the side, oar falling from his fingers. Captain. She turned to find him with drooping eyes. He went limp, then fell backward, unconscious, knocking his head against the back seat of the boat. The rest of the sailors weren't doing any better. The other two dinghies had begun to drift aimlessly. Not a single sailor seemed to be conscious.
My destiny, Kaza thought. My choice.
Not a thing to be carted from place to place and ordered to soul cast. Not a tool. A person. She shoved aside an unconscious sailor and took the oars herself. It was difficult work. She was unaccustomed to physical labor, and her fingers had trouble gripping. They'd started to dissolve further. Perhaps a year or two for her survival was optimistic. Still, she rowed. She fought the waters until she at long last got close enough to hop out into the water and feel rock beneath her feet. Her robes billowing up around her, she finally thought to check if Vazirmeb was alive. None of the sailors in her dinghy were breathing, so she let the boat slip backward on the waves. Alone, Kaza fought through the surf, and finally, on hands and knees, crawled up onto the stones of the island. There she collapsed, drowsy. Why was she so sleepy? She awoke to a small kremlin scuttling across the rocks near her. It had a strange shape, with large wings and a head that made it look like an axe hound. Its carapace shimmered with dozens of colors. Kaza could remember a time when she'd collected kremlings, pinning them to boards,
and proclaiming she'd become a natural historian. What had happened to that girl?
She was transformed by necessity.
Given the soulcaster, which was always to be kept in the royal family, given a charge and a death sentence. She stirred, and the Kremlings scrambled away. She coughed, then began to crawl toward those rock formations.
That city, dark city of stone?
She could barely think, though she did notice a gemstone as she passed it, a large uncut gem heart among the bleached white carapace leftovers of a dead great shell. Vazirmeb had been right. She collapsed again near the perimeter of the rock formations. They looked like large, ornate buildings, crusted with creme.
"Ah," a voice said from behind her. "I should have guessed the drug would not affect you as quickly. You are barely human anymore."
Kaza rolled over and found someone approaching on quiet, bare feet. The cook?
Yes, that was her, with the tattooed face. "You," Kaza croaked. "You poisoned us." "After many warnings not to come to this place," the cook said. "It is rare I must guard it so aggressively. Men must not again discover this place." "The gemstones?" Kaza asked, growing more drowsy. "Or is it something else? Something more?"
"I cannot speak," the cook said. "Even to sate a dying demand. There are those who could pull secrets from your soul, and the cost would be the ends of worlds. Sleep now, soulcaster. This is the most merciful end I could give."
The cook began to hum. Pieces of her broke off. She crumbled to a pile of chittering little Kremlings that moved out of her clothing, leaving it in a heap.
"Hallucination?" Kaza wondered as she drifted. She was dying. Well, that was nothing new.
The Kremlings began to pick at her hand, taking off her soulcaster. No, she had one last thing to do. With a defiant shout, she pressed her hand to the rocky ground beneath her and demanded it change. When it became smoke, she went with it. Her choice. Her destiny.